in an incredible return to form, almost a year since the last time, we have the one and only Zachary Hall. How you doing?
Hello. Hello. Hi.
How was that intro?
where did I go? Was that ever addressed?
you were left on a cliffhanger, I think. But we'll pick up where you left off. Yeah, we got some good stories today.
Yeah, I agree. Just some behind the scenes. We hit record and I just ran with the show.
It's just like old times.
Yeah. So now I don't know what to do, because what I did do was the first topic, and now we've got this situation. So, you know,
do the first topic. Do the first topic.
Okay. I'll do the first topic. Apple Vision Pro. There's a new episode of their immersive content. The whole reason to buy Apple Vision Pro. And it's their adventure series, and the episode is called Parkour.
And they've updated the like scissor reel trailer thing. So, you know, like you can go in and see, like there's like 2 minute thing. They show it in the Apple Store demo as well, but like you can get to it in the app. That's different now.
I do not know.
Yeah, I haven't got one either, Zach. So,
chances value, right?
Exactly. yeah, chances virtual reality. It's our virtual reality, his real reality.
Yeah.
So they've updated the scissor reel. So it's got some clips from like the NBA and a lot more sport content in there. I'm assuming they've updated the trailer in preparation of rollout to additional countries, which we're expecting to come maybe next month, right? And some announcements there. So they maybe updated the trailer to get it like localized and stuff. The adventure series, they have the now parkour installment, which is their second episode. So they're continuing their very snail pace rollout of content on that, because they've got a couple episodes of the dinosaur one, a couple episodes of adventure. They did the MLS thing that everybody hated, but they're moving with it. I mean, their problem is like that is by far the, you know, the best. You did the demo, right? You did the Vision Pro demo.
I did do the demo, and my best friend lives a mile from me, has a Vision Pro that I've used. I've never had an Apple Vision Pro with my Apple ID in it, which I think makes a big difference in terms of, you know, really getting the experience, you know, because the demo is Apple's version and my friend's is his stuff. But I do know like the mechanics of using it and everything.
Yeah, and video watching is by far the best part of the thing. And the best version of the video is the immersive stuff, where it's, you know, the 4K resolution in both eyes, 180 degree range. And comes back to like their next VR acquisition, which I believe you exclusively reported back in the day, right?
I do believe I exclusively reported, and Bloomberg exclusively corroborated with a statement from Apple. No hard feelings.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that at some point they will have a better story about doing the immersive stuff in more real time. Like, you know, the NBA shots are from all accounts impressive, but they're from, you know, a game that happened 3 months ago. It's like a bit late in the day. The MLS thing is another good example where whether you liked it or not, it was clips from the playoff game from 6 months ago compared to when it came out. So they need to somehow work out a better workflow for getting this stuff out on a more regular basis and a more current basis, because I think they'd sell a lot more units if they could get a steady stream of some kind of sports content, not just like the 2 minute clips that you see in the scissor reel. But I think they have problems of rights, they have problems of cost, because it costs a lot of money to get all these cameras set up at these locations. I think also they like present it as that, oh, it's as easy as taking an immersive video on your iPhone. No, you know, you just pick it up, you record, and you're done. I think the actual truth of taking these immersive high-res videos that are 180 degrees, there's a lot of editing involved, a lot of post-processing involved. I think that's part of their contribution to how long it takes. So I'm hoping that they're like working on ways to trim that down. And then also a function of unit sales, right? When they sell more units, they're more incentivized to get more content available for it and do the investment. So hopefully those things will come together. Because video and immersive experiences are definitely the shining light of this product at the moment. The productivity stuff's fine. Chance talked about it before, but especially if you're going into a retail store, you know, they have these like 30-minute demos you can do, but you could sell people on them, price aside. Just show an immersive, like put the headset on, show an immersive video, and people would be like, wow, and move on. So anything they can do to get more of that kind of stuff available will help them. And one thing they have launched in partnership with Disney is this What If, you know, experience app thing, which is the longest you know, duration piece of content that we've got in this kind of format. It's not an immersive video. It's more like a standalone app. It's kind of like the Disney version of the Encounter Dinosaurs demo, right? Mm-hmm. That application where you have like a narrative hour-long experience, which is kind of just like a story but told out, and you get some chops. It's not fully a game. It's just like a guided narration, but you get 3D, and you know the reviews have been pretty solid for that. So more of that will definitely help the Vision Pro sales pitch. Unfortunately, I don't think the What If app would exist unless Apple had done the deal with Disney for the Vision Pro launch, right? Because it must cost them a lot of money to produce all that. And what is the return on investment? In the What If case, the app is literally free. But even if you know you were going to charge for it or put ads in it or something, there's just, the market share of Vision Pro is just so small. You know, they've only sold a couple hundred thousand, that all of that stuff is a big uphill battle. So it's a chicken and egg situation, quite literally. I don't quite know how they're going to get themselves out of that hole. The best thing they can do is second-gen hardware that's cheaper, but that's, from all intents and purposes, a while off at this time.
Yeah. Seven thoughts in response. Now, one, at large, like on a podcast, you go week to week, and so you sort of judge, like, well, what have they done since last week, or you know, even just last month? And the Vision Pro situation is like so not week to week. It's like, you know, you're looking at like quarter to quarter. What are they doing? I mean, it's the best example is that Apple released the thing with the same material that they showed, you know, 6-9 months before it was released. You know, it was never like we showed this at WWDC last year, and you know, a year and you know, half a year plus later, we've got the same. We're showing you the same stuff that we showed then. You know, we didn't use that time to cook any more content up, you know. And then I don't think anyone would have predicted this very slow pace of releasing, you know, 12-minute clips and calling them episodes. You know, like Apple's way of calling an ad, a 3-minute ad, a short film is a pretty big stretch of the use of the word film. But then to call these like episodes, you know, when they're 6 weeks in between, when they're 10 minutes long, like they just feel like, I mean, they're terrific, but you know, just down to earth reality is like they feel like they're meant to sell the device on like this is a pitch for what this can do, you know, when you buy it. But accept this, that you bought it, and then this is the pitch for what it can do. In terms of
it, could be the most incredible
format,
life-changing video experience of your life, but it only lasts 12 minutes and you can get through all of them in an hour, and then you're like, well, what do you do for the rest of the year?
You know, if only Apple had a streaming video service, and they could just embrace this. But you know, I think whenever we see the first like original content series from Apple TV Plus that's made in some way to embrace that Vision Pro in a better way, that'll be a step forward from these 12-minute clips. So
you need to go, like, the 12-minute clips of nature are great or whatever, but like, you know, at least the What If thing is like an hour-long narrative thing. Yeah. Apple itself has no narrative content, right? Like it's all just kind of basically documentary or experiential stuff. Like I think you could film proper shows and movies and stuff in that format, and people would lap it up. But
yeah,
it's going to cost a lot of money because you have, you know, way more cameras than you have to dress sets in perspectives that you never have to bother before, right? Like so many Hollywood sets are shot with the idea that you're looking like into a shoebox, right? Because the cameras aren't looking anywhere else. But if you do 180 degrees, you suddenly got to worry about everything that's behind you. You got to worry about the other cameras, the other people on set. Like, how do you even, like with some of the adventure stuff, it's just one person with a camera, right? Filming. So it's a lot easier for that. But if you're trying to do like a proper Hollywood production, there's so many people behind the camera that you don't really see, lights, rigging, you know, all of this stuff. And so that's a big obstacle. And I think that's part of the reason why that stuff just doesn't exist yet, because they don't have the answer right now. For if you spent loads and loads and loads of money, you could probably figure it out, but it's not even going to be seen by that many people right now, because they're only making 400,000 a whole year. So there's big, you know, like chicken and egg life cycle problems for the ecosystem.
Yeah. It seems like the again, not having owned one of, not having a Vision Pro to use day to day, this is like a Maze VR. It's probably the closest experience to like recurring events that you can tap into that are more than just looking at it through your MacBook or TV screen. And that's for, you know, I think it's mostly live concerts, maybe some sports stuff there. But And then the Insta360 8K camera. Have you seen this where it's super expensive, but it's also like super high quality for all around you? Yeah. That seems like it could be a way to at least like make YouTube content that takes advantage of this format. You know, it isn't going to be the stuff that you get, you know, just the what you got from like the demos. And who knew that the press demos were going to be also what the product usage was going to be like? We're like,
yeah,
we saw this clip. It's like, yeah, sure. That's like a compact, like half an hour demonstration of what this will do. But no, that's actually the whole thing for now. What if, as it seemed like it's had mixed reviews in terms of, is it a gimmick? Is it compelling or not? But that's animation seems like a way to a real shortcut to making this stuff, because if you're actually filming in reality, then you've got to have a whole lot of stuff going on organized. But if you're doing it animation wise, then you can. I would imagine it's more like programming it, and so the logistics are much easier. Cost is better.
It's like how generally there's more 3D movies that are animated than live action, because it's just, you know, you can render it all on the computer. Yeah.
Like if you imagine even what if is Marvel, and so it's an animated version of isn't like live action. But if you imagine that of like an Avengers Endgame scene where there's like, you know, the movie's way overpacked anyway with like 30 different characters, and you can't keep up with all 30 of them at one time. And so you look around and there's this battle happening all around you, and there isn't even like this dialogue happening. It's just, here's the 6-minute action scene. Like, that would be pretty compelling in this mode. You kind of pay attention to who you like. So that's kind of cool. I've used the Quest 3 since the Vision Pro came out. I reached out to Meta and asked to receive one to just evaluate over time, and I've been doing that. And my daughter has a Quest 2 that I bought her for her birthday. She was really, really wanted to have that experience, and she really enjoys it for things like gaming. The kids always ask me, what am I doing? What game am I playing? And the answer is always browser. I'm browsing the web, but I like it a lot because you know, like in a Vision Pro, you get this massive window in your, you know, environment, and it's got decent enough pass through where, unlike the Quest 2, the Quest 3 has color pass through. It's gotten better. I think thanks to competition from Vision Pro and showing how it can be done, isn't nearly the same quality, but it's better. It's better than it launched with. But honestly, like, my use case is using it the way I use my Mac. It's just like web browser, video watching. Kind of see the Quest 3 is like, it's a $500 product if you buy it yourself. It's, you know, that's like iPad territory.
Yep.
And what do I do on an iPad when I use it for leisure? I browse the web and I watch a video. It's like, you know, so it's like, I sit on the sofa and, you know, throw up a big gigantic browser window and a video player over there, and kind of scratches the same itch for me. The big drawback though, right now is the operating system, Meta's Quest operating system. You get up to 3 windows at a time, which is what I thought Vision Pro might be limited at. But Vision Pro is like, you know, as many as you want, and pin them anywhere, and they stay in the room, and you leave and come back, and they're still there. Quest is like, you get 3, you can put them side by side, or you can wrap them around you, but it's just 3 windows. It can even be, you know, 1 app, 3 windows, but that's a limitation. And they're already showing like ads of pinning windows in different places around you, still with that 3 app limit or 3 window limit. But they have said that they want to overhaul the OS and make it, you know, more like a computer. And, you know, so I think when that happens, like, then the Vision Pro Quest comparison is easier to make, because right now it really is, you know, there's the giant price difference, but there's also like the quality difference. But it's the OS multitasking that limits it in my mind right now. But I do use the Quest 3 like almost every day for that kind of iPad like leisure mode.
I mean, you can kind of parallel the quality of like the Quest to like the base iPad, and then the Vision Pro is like the iPad Pro. You know, they're all kind of doing the same task. Just one's a way nicer experience, eh? And it's funny you mentioned like the OS limitations on the Quest, because anybody that does have the Vision Pro then has the same comment where like, for $3,500, this is a version, and you know, Vision OS 1.0 with loads of limitations, and it could be way better. Which obviously we might get with WWC with Vision OS 2 and stuff. So it's, you know, it's the start of a journey. But yeah, like whichever rung of the ladder you're on, everyone's like, well, the OS isn't good enough to really replace the computer, right? Just yet. Yeah. But the Quest is $500, which is, you know, within funny money territory, right? Where it doesn't matter so much that you don't have to actually be productive out of the thing. Whereas the $3,500 Vision Pro is a completely different equation of, you know, worth and value. But yeah, I'm obviously, for me, Vision Pro isn't even available in the UK at all yet, right? Yeah. So we're waiting on that to happen. I don't think I'm going to buy the first generation just because it's so expensive. But I would definitely want to go to the store and do the demo and stuff because I see the future there. Yeah.
Yeah. What would your price be? Like if it was $2,000, would that feel more palpable?
I think so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like part of it's the fact that it's brand new, right? So even if the product was perfect, the ecosystem is non-existent because it's version one with a small app store and nobody wants to make content for it. And, you know, like, so there's a big equation there where even if they had this, even if it was $3,500 with, you know, Vision OS, with the version two of the hardware in a couple of years' time, the ecosystem and the availability of content should be much further along at that point. So even then it makes it a bit more, you know, a bit more valuable. But I still even think then $3,500 is just so much money. That's more than I spend on my laptop, right? The laptop I use literally every day of my life to get my actual work done and a load of enjoyment. And I spent like $3,000 on that. Like, you know.
Yeah.
So I think something, you know, $1,500 to $2,000 is more, you know, palatable. It's still a high. And even at $1,500 to $2,000, I might buy it, but it's not going to be like a mass success, right? Like the Quest is $500. Like, you know, your $2,000 is still four times as much as a Quest cost. So like over time, they really need to get it more down to like the $1,000, $1,500 kind of mark, I think, for it to get wide adoption. But it's still going to be an uphill battle. But I think they kind of know that, and there's a reason why it's called Vision Pro, not Vision. And it'll be many generations, and then they'll get there. But
it's so weird to have talked about, you know, what was the name before Vision Pro Reality Pro, probably.
Yeah,
it's so weird to talk about Reality Pro for so long, and then have Vision Pro be out for like be announced for a year at this point, really. And then the way we talk about it is still like, you know, forward looking.
Yeah, like I mean, but I think you could have predicted that before they announced it, as we did, right? Like the way the product's framed, it's never going to be mass market. They don't even have enough production for it to be mass market.
Well, it doesn't have to be mass market to be polished. Like you know, the hardware's there.
I think for a version one software release, the software is pretty good from what I've seen. I think it's way more capable
than the Quest.
Yeah, better than the Quest and way more capable than I was expecting it to be, right? Like, I think in many cases, you can be more productive on the Vision Pro than you can on an iPad, right?
An
iPad's been out for a decade plus,
It comes down to form factor in that point, like on your face or in your hand.
You know? Yeah, and you get, you know, you can have more than three windows open, you can multitask reasonably well. Like, there's obviously, you know, some obvious improvements. But I think for a version one release, it's about as good as I was expecting it could be, right?
Mm-hmm.
And but you just have to be well aware of the roadmap. And you're not going to recommend this to anybody. And Chance has said this on the show before. He owns one. He says he uses it almost every day. And he wouldn't recommend it to anybody else either. Because, you know, like, the price to value to, you know, it's just way out of whack right now.
Yeah.
It'll get there over time. But I'm not even sure Vision, the second generation will get there. It'll be like a third generation or fourth generation thing before it really kind of catches on.
Yeah, I will say, like, if you can get by on a Quest 3, I think that's like the minimum viable headset from them. Like, even my same friend who has the Vision Pro also has a Quest Pro, and the Quest 3 is better in almost all regards in that way. Funny thing with the Vision Pro is, like, it's got more RAM than my MacBook Air, you know, by 2x.
Yeah.
It's got the same processor because I'm on M2, you know. Although the processor for a Vision Pro, like, man, it's half. I'm on M4 already, and now it's still on M2.
And what, we're not expecting a second gen to what, 2026?
Until the M8, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be M5 or M6 territory, right?
They
rev it.
Yeah. But it's got that Mac mode where it can be your display. Like, you can use your Mac inside of it, but it's... you have to have the Mac to do it. And I would be using a Mac with half the RAM and, you know, same power, but half the RAM. Or you could use a Mac with an M3 instead of an M2 Vision Pro, you know. And I guess that then you're getting, like, more power than the headset itself delivers. But It's a little.
Yeah, I think the obvious direction for the Mac feature is like make it so the windows can stand aside and not be in the, you know, a rectangle of a viewport of a Mac.
Come
display.
Out of the come out of
yeah,
the
like so because like one the coolest part of the Vision Pro is you can have all those iPad apps or, you know, quote unquote iPad apps, you know, they're Vision mm-hmm. designed, but they yeah. can be like spot, you know, spotted around your viewport. But if you do the Mac virtual window, not only is it only one window, all of your Mac windows then contain inside it. Like you want to be able to like place them to the left and right of you and like move them around and stuff. So
yeah.
Either they make the software better, so you don't have to use go back to the escape hatch of the Mac virtual display, or they make the Mac virtual display feature better.
Yeah,
or maybe both. Is required.
Yeah, and really like the video stuff is like I don't really that's not like a deal breaker whether Apple does video or not on their own. Does it matter? Like it's the browser experience and then the app experience and I think and just the OS experience. I think the OS experience is just phenomenal. From what I've used, the price, I can overcome the price because it is good hardware and it is, there isn't like something that is, as you know, nearly as good as it for half the price. So I think even the price I'm okay with and it's form factor in terms of like, I think it's cool to use a MacBook in a coffee shop. Like that's norm, you know, but. And I'm totally comfortable with using a VR headset or mixed reality headset on a plane for travel. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's like wearing headphones to me. Like, don't talk to me. Like, please, this is a sign not to talk to me, but in a coffee shop.
It has such a corollary to when AirPods came out, right? Like,
yeah.
AirPods came out, everyone thought they looked stupid, and they kind of did look stupid, but I thought they were really cool in terms of how they functioned. And it was great mm-hmm. to cut the wires off. So I bought them anywhere and I used them. And you know what? Give it a year and a half, and everyone completely accepted it. And then another year later, you had AirPods for Christmas meme where they became like a massive phenomenon. So the same thing will happen with VR headsets for sure.
Yeah, yeah. It would be nice because it is very, I think it is as portable. Like an iMac in the coffee shop is ridiculous. You know, we've seen the memes of people doing it, but it's silly because it's not portable. Like you're going out of your way to do that. A laptop in a coffee shop, you know, that's the norm. But a headset like the Vision Pro, which I think is like looks very nice. And with
it looks as nice as it can for what it is right now, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
yeah
and there's like, being on the observer side of having my friend use Vision Pro with eyesight and I see his eyes and that does signal to me that he can see me too, like that's practical, there's use in that. Mm-hmm. It's comforting in a weird way where I use the Quest 3, my kids usually think I can't see them and I'm like, no, I see you, like I'm doing like an eye exam, like no, you're holding up five fingers. Because there's no way for them to know whether I can or not. But you know, overcoming price, overcoming like, you know, where form factor is appropriate. For me, it's literally my vision. It's you know, you can't necessarily use it with glasses without damaging the lens of the vision or the lens of your glasses. They still don't make the corrective lenses for my astigmatism, which is not like crazy rare. It's just out of the range of like average, but it isn't like, like I can buy glasses and see, you know, see. So it's that factor because I just went to buy the lenses right after launch and they wouldn't make them. And it was just because my astigmatism in one eye was too strong. It was out of their range. And then and that brought me to the Quest 3 because you can wear glasses with that without an issue. You can get magnetic attachment lenses, but you can just wear glasses and it's fine.
Because there's enough space inside the...
There's space and there isn't the eye tracking like there is.
Right, yeah.
Because
they're more hand tracking, right, in terms of the controllers.
Yeah. There's pretty good hand tracking. There's really good precision controller input. And I just use one because I'm not gaming. I'm just using it like I would a
mouse. Do you think they'll do controllers for the Vision Pro at some point?
Maybe not Apple, but maybe like MFI. Like
yeah, that's what I think is going to happen. They can do an MFI program.
Yeah, they can do a Belkin or Logitech.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know. But it really is like the way for me to be able to use vision is to have a special kind of corrective lenses that or contacts, because I haven't been able to wear contacts comfortably for a decade, but there's this other type that I've been recommended that. So it just comes down to like me taking an eye exam. I went to do a LASIK consultation and they were like, no, we're not going to do LASIK on your eyes. We wouldn't give you 20/20 vision. You'd have 20/40 vision from 20/80 vision. So it wouldn't be worth it. Yeah, that's the recap on vision after a year with you and I not talking about it.
The future's bright. Happy Hour this week is brought to you by HelloFresh. HelloFresh delivers fresh, high-quality, pre-portioned ingredients to your door with easy-to-follow recipe instructions so you can make delicious meals easily. Sign up now at HelloFresh.com/happyhoursweet to get free dessert for life. That's one dessert item per box while your subscription is active. Make delicious food a priority this spring. Save time and hassle by skipping the grocery store with easy, tasty recipes delivered to your door thanks to HelloFresh. And with pre-portioned ingredients, you'll never waste money on excess food. Dig into their biggest menu selection yet with over 45 weekly dinner options to choose from and even more market add-on items that suit any lifestyle. For instance, you can wake up your taste buds and get summer ready with their balanced, fit and wholesome recipes full of fresh produce and under 650 calories per serving. Meals arrive on the date that you specify with all the ingredients and easy to follow recipe cards. Now, Chance has spoken about how much he loves HelloFresh on the show before, and I know he got sent some meals that we'll be able to talk about soon. But also, Zach, you've had HelloFresh before, right?
I have received many a box of HelloFresh food. Fresh food is what it is. You know, it comes in a cardboard box, recyclable, and you get these ice packs in there that you can also recycle. And it's like someone went grocery shopping for you. You just take everything from the box to your refrigerator or freezer, whatever it is, and you get the recipe cards. And you get to make stuff as if you know what you're doing in the kitchen. And it's an easy way to impress people. It's an easy way to treat yourself and skip the whole research and grocery shopping process and have a good home-cooked meal by way of HelloFresh. So, huge fan.
Yeah, I love how easy it is. They send you all the ingredients you need and the recipes so you can make great-tasting, wholesome meals with no excess waste. And to make the offer even sweeter, quite literally, when you sign up today using our URL, you'll unlock a free dessert for life to satisfy your sweet tooth with a free decadent dessert of your choice inside every HelloFresh box that you order. So go to HelloFresh.com/happyhoursweet. Free dessert for life. One dessert item per box while subscription is active. That's free dessert for life at HelloFresh.com/happyhoursweet. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. Thanks to HelloFresh for sponsoring the show.
All right, on the topic of futuristic technology today, with a price.
With Vision Pro pricing.
With Vision Pro pricing. Like, we thought the iPhone 10 was expensive when it came out. It's like, this is next year's iPhone today. You know, it's $1,000.
And we had those rumors last week about the even more expensive, like, iPhone 17 Ultra situation.
Yeah. Like, the Tim Cook thing is like, if you really want the innovation stuff, you're going to pay for it. Well,
look, Tim's going to be retired in the next couple of years. He's quickly getting every Ultra version out he can.
Yeah. Here's this next thing, which is this rumor of a foldable 20-inch, you know, roughly 20-inch MacBook / iPad. I mean, it's being called like a MacBook. It seems like this could be like the touchscreen MacBook. It's all screen. It folds in half like a laptop, I guess. But it could use the M5 chip, which, you know, is a next year beyond processor. It, you know, hasn't been announced yet. But this rumor coming from Quo, from Ross Young, from Jeff Poo. So it isn't like a lone rumor out there. This seems like there's some steam behind it. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've been vaguely hearing about Apple's foldable plans for the last few months, and now it seems to be starting to materialize where they are interested in doing like a foldable iPhone form factor, but nearer term they're going to do this foldable iPad / MacBook thing, depending on how you choose to describe it, right? Because, you know, if you have a foldable device that has an M5 chip, the only thing that really separates a MacBook and an iPad is which OS it runs. Mm-hmm. And unclear from, you know, Quo, Ross Young, and Pooh's reporting, who are mostly supply chain side, what exactly operating system it will be, but either an iPad or a MacBook, right? And it's going to be, they think it's going to be about an 18.8 inch screen that folds in half. So it's roughly 13 inch, you know, MacBook size when folded, right? 12 inch, 13 inch MacBook size, something mm-hmm. like that. And then you'd unfold it, and presumably you could have a virtual keyboard show on the bottom screen and use your normal screen like normal, or you could have the keyboard disappear and have a full screen just app experience.
Have a normal size keyboard with gigantic margins like Apple does.
To me, if you want me to bet today, it would mm-hmm. be iPad OS based, because all of that software experience is already designed with a virtual keyboard in mind that can disappear and be there, and, you know, the insets of the content can change. Like adapting that to a Mac is a much bigger uplift. And all of Apple's modern products that are like new form factors all run on iOS bases, you know, like Vision Pro, for instance. So if you want me to guess today, there's probably a iPadOS based product, but it'll look like a MacBook kind of design.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Reasonable assumption. I don't know if it's a reasonable product, but reasonable.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like, I don't know if that's the truth or not. But that seems to be where I would bet today. I can kind of see why this, I know you mentioned this might be the touchscreen MacBook thing, could also be separate, right? Like, they could have this thing and then also their line of, they're not, because this thing's going to be expensive, right? They're going to introduce, it's going to be super premium and expensive thing. They're not going to dispense with their entire rest of their range for a long time, right? Yeah. Even if this thing pops off. So I think you could have this and you could also just have touchscreen MacBooks at the same time, which would still have the standard clamshell with the physical keyboard at the below, but the top screen could be touchscreen OLED.
I mean, even whenever Apple made the MacBook Air in 2008, right? That was one version, one very specialized version of a MacBook. And it eventually did inspire the rest of the lineup in ways that were regretted and then corrected. But you could see this being the same way where, like, you've got the MacBook and the MacBook Pro line, but then if this is a Mac, then it's this whole other separate thing that's costly more. You pay much more for lesser specs, like the MacBook Air was at the time. Or if it's an iPad, then it's this. And haven't there been rumors before, like separate from this, that the iPad is what they would do with foldable technology?
Yeah. There's been rumors of foldable iPads, foldable phones. Like, yeah. And seems like they're actually gunning towards some sort of form factor for a 2026 kind of range. But yeah, expected to be expensive. And we'll obviously get more details when it comes closer. But I'd be hyped for it. Like, I think it sounds awesome.
Yeah, and the obvious joke people make is like, the MacBook is a foldable device. But the difference being that it's half screen, half hardware, you know, keyboard and trackpad. And this thing is like, if you imagine your MacBook, but it's screen and then screen, you know.
I have the 16-inch MacBook Pro, and it's beefy and big and only got a 16-inch screen, right? This thing, presuming it's relatively thin when folded, it would be like the form factor of like an iPad 13-inch, like a kind of like a MacBook Air kind of form factor. But then you could unfold it and it would have a 20-inch screen for you on your desk.
Yeah.
You know, the biggest iPad they've shipped by a long stretch. So I think it's very compelling.
And you don't have to, you know, use your much imagination to imagine what a product like this could look like. Like, it's not going to be some sci-fi thing where it's just this, like, you know, like jelly filling, you know, slimy display in your hand that is, you know, out of the future. It's like there's this Lenovo ThinkPad X1 Fold product that's a 16-inch PC, so it runs Windows, and it looks like a laptop kind of, but it's just, you know, you just imagine the screen runs from the top to the bottom of the laptop as if it were opened up. It's premium priced. It's $3,099 normally. It has a weird sales price of $2,851.08. And we joked before in Slack that the 8 cents is for the processor it uses because it's a pretty dated processor by now. But if you look at that hardware though, like it looks practical. Like, oh, that's hardware that you can imagine shipping this decade.
Yeah, I mean, look at the iPad Pro, the 2024 iPad Pro, right? It's M4 chip, very powerful, and it's 5.5 millimeters thin, and it's got a whole screen and battery and stuff in there. Like, if you just doubled the iPad, so it's like a 1 centimeter thick product, and they just merge the screen together on the side. I mean, obviously, it's, you know, hand wavingness there, but then you've basically got a 20 inch form factor right there, and it'd be awesome. I'm looking forward to this.
The hand wavy part is like, you know, step one, do the thing. Step two, step three, profit.
But
like,
you know what I mean, right? Yeah, like, you can see it.
It isn't like when we kind of imagine like, oh, the iPhone with Touch ID in the display and Face ID without seeing anything in it. Like, that all felt like sci-fi stuff, and it never really happened either.
And it might still happen, but it might actually come later than this product, right? Because other foldables exist, right? It's a real thing. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it, but it's a while away. But at least we got some solidification of the, you know, like, ambiguous, nebulous iPad, iPhone foldable stuff.
Yep. Moving on, something that's closer and more affordable is iOS 18. And
free? Well, maybe partly free.
Yeah. And Mark Gurman has some more details than he's had so far about, like, specific features of what iOS 18 will do with AI and just non-AI features as well. So one thing in his newsletter over this past weekend on Power On was the ability to recolor app icons, which my first reaction to reading that was, oh, this is the update where they look at the trend from a few years ago of all this customization, and they finally deliver on all of that. You know, we got the lock screen stuff at first with, like, you know, 5 fonts and new ways to customize your lock screen, but the home screen had...
Well, they did widgets, right? Like, that was a big deal.
Yeah, but widgets is like an Android 1.0 kind of thing, like not like a customize the way that people are doing. Like,
yeah, people kind of hacked on the widget system to make it give you some fake customization, right?
Right.
Like, yeah. Gaps and photos and colors and stuff.
Yeah.
And now they use shortcuts to make the app launchers with custom icons.
Yeah.
And this is like the first party solution to that.
Yeah. And I know Chance has his Emily, you know, who he's married to. I've had my Emily from before, who's 11 years old now. And I looked at her iPhone the other day, and she has this whole screen of apps. Like, she's got multiple home screens of apps, but one is just these custom app icons for like the stock apps, and they're all pretty. I had to take a picture because I was like, A, people still do this. B, she's doing this. And then C, I don't know how she's doing it. Like, what is her method? Is this shortcuts or some profile or something? I don't know. But
yeah. I mean, I see it on TikTok, right? Like,
so it certainly isn't too late to do this now from a system.
Yeah. Like, people still, it's still very popular. You just have like aesthetic layouts of icons in different colors across pages, and then all the comments are like, how do you do this, and they explain a few like shortcuts and nobody actually does it, right? So there are customers out there who want to do it on a big scale.
What would you do to the Safari icon if you could?
I mean, this is the question, right? Mark Gurman's specific wording was recolor the icon.
Yeah.
Change the color of app icons. Yes. That doesn't mean replace the icon, right? If you read
if you read it, it's not as far out as people are doing today, like my daughter is doing on her phone.
Yeah, like, Android, you know, you go back, you can replace the whole launcher on Android, at least back in the day, and they've let you change icons out. And on the Mac, you can change your app icons if you really want to. If you get an alternate icon, you can change the icon.
Mm-hmm.
Is Apple going to give you that much flexibility on iOS? It's yet to be seen. I think it's very telling that Gurman specifically said recolor.
Yeah.
And the more recent version of Android have like a system feature, which in part of their material use stuff, where you can like basically pick like a color theme for the system, right, and then the app icons reflect the theme. So they have like the branding, and then they can change like the background color to match. So maybe that's more what Apple will do here. But there's obvious questions about, like, you know, is it just like an image filter in Pixelmator where you take a red icon and you just tint the whole thing? Will it generatively AI the icon to like make it look fitted in? Will like app developers have to opt in and maybe like layer out their icons themselves? One thing I thought when I read this was, you know, like tvOS or visionOS, their app icons are like stacked layers because they're like 3D, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what if they had like a new app icon format for iOS 18 where you select the layers, you pick which one's your background color one, and then maybe it has like a parallax effect when you tilt it to give you some 3D, but also you can change the background as well if you want to customize it.
Mm-hmm.
And that would like kind of force developers to do it because they'd want to fit in with the modern system. But I also do wonder if they did offer this, whether I'd want to do it, because I kind of like the effect where the app icon transforms into the app and it kind of keeps the same colors, right? So like, and some apps do better than others. You know, like the Facebook app. I don't really open Facebook anymore, but it's a blue icon. And then you click on it and like the interface is blue, right? So like it has that continuity. But then you have like, you know, Threads. Threads is black and white. I guess the app is black and white, but it's mostly white. You know, so like some apps it works better than others. But I do think there was a bit, very meaningful choice of words in Gurman's reporting to recolor. Yeah.
App launch performance has gotten us to where now we don't, and RAM amounts has gotten to where we don't see as many other splash screens, I think. So. You know, I take your point, but that's kind of a thing where, like, ideally you wouldn't even want to have that effect. It opens so fast that you don't have that middle stage.
That's fair. Yeah,
I would. One thing I thought about was the apps that are just an icon over a white background or black background. You know, the ones that we usually dislike a lot.
Yeah.
And if the option there was like, well, you change the white to something else, you know, and then if you do an app that's like, even say the podcast app, because we're on a podcast, you know, which is like the whole icon itself is more of a thing, and it's, you know, it isn't like an icon on a you know, squircle. But I would like to do something like this as something to try out. My aesthetic would be black and white. I would like to have just sort of a like monochrome, but not run the whole phone on monochrome, like in grayscale, but just actually black and white. I think that would be very cool to have a cool look that like feels like, oh, this is my phone, you know? And especially like if it's just Apple's apps, like as part of iOS 18, it's like with our apps, you can do this and developers can add support for it as well. I use a lot of Apple apps. Like my dock is just Apple apps. So and that'd be pretty cool. What else? We've got this emoji stuff where it's like, this reminded me of a little bit of like shortcuts where Apple's like, you know, we don't need to make the feature. We just have shortcuts now. You can make your own features for certain things.
Yeah.
And then like Swift UI, where it's like, you can just like, in almost like plain text, like write out instead of code, you know, your appearance of an app. Mm-hmm. And now it's like in plain text, design your own emoji with generative AI.
Yeah, I don't know whether this feature will be just like a emoji like gimmick where like it's fun, you do it in the first like month and you never touch it again.
Yeah.
But they are not scared of doing features where they're fun for the first month and you never touch them again. So I feel like out of all the random generative stuff that is in the world right now, mm-hmm. making some fun custom emoji is not that far-fetched, right? Like people always want more emoji. You know, it's a known thing that when there are OS updates that have new emoji, then the OS update uptake rate is way higher. And so what if you could just make any emoji you wanted? And I'm sure at a technical level, you know, you're not actually making a new emoji because emojis are like text.
Yeah,
you'll basically be sending an image or maybe like an iMessage sticker, right? Like, and it maybe gives them a feature that can be iMessage exclusive, not supported on RCS, for instance, right? Like, because obviously iOS 18 is going to support RCS at some point, according to them. So this can be like a platform specific thing, but you can imagine it'd be pretty fun. Like, and they already kind of do it where like, you know, you can type in messages and then you go on the emoji and you can like do the replacements where it has like the words and then you can, you know, like if it says like love, you can tap love and you can choose a different emoji to replace it. Mm-hmm. You can kind of imagine, well, if you tap the emoji keyboard, it just looks at your text box and then suggests some emoji that's made up for you in the keyboard area. And you could like tap to include them or something.
Mm-hmm.
So there's obvious way for them to integrate it, like where it would actually be somewhat popular and not just in this weird like part of the system that nobody ever goes into. So I can see it happening. And you can imagine like an on-device model could be pretty good at making pixel art icons, right? Which is basically what emoji are. They're not like super photorealistic things. They're just little things they can make on the fly on the device and combine a few elements together and then, you know, make them look pretty. So I'm down to see this. Like, out of the world of random generative AI stuff, I think this is something that has some usefulness, you know, like in terms of image generation. Because a lot of the other image generation stuff is like just making like memes or jokes or random pictures, right? Like you kind of have the scope of image generation where it's like replacing art and artists, and then you have the kind of scope which is just like making fun stuff and making jokes. And then this kind of not either of those buckets and has some utility and some enjoyment factor. So, and you can, it'll make a great demo as part of the videos when they're talking about it.
And
so,
you get around the snail pace of the emoji consortium.
Yes! Yeah, because they have definitely come to a crawl.
Not photorealistic pixel icons. Tell it to someone from the 80s about modern emoji. Yeah. Also, is there also here? Let's see. I think that's it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's iOS 18. That's what we get in a couple weeks.
Finally, this week, we're also sponsored by LinkedIn Jobs. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. As you're growing your team, it's so important to have high quality candidates to interview so you know you're ultimately hiring the best person for the job. And LinkedIn makes it so easy to find them. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. It is ubiquitous and the place you want to be for your job to be seen with a vast network of more than a billion professionals. I know when my brother was looking for work, LinkedIn is the first place that he went to find a job. LinkedIn just gives you access to professionals that you can't find anywhere else. In fact, in a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you aren't looking on LinkedIn, you're looking on the wrong place and simply missing out on people. Hiring is easy when you have that many quality candidates available. So easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. And LinkedIn is constantly working to make their hiring platform even better. They recently just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, which makes the process even quicker. So join 2.5 million small businesses that use LinkedIn for hiring. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/happyhour. That's linkedin.com/happyhour to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Thanks to LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring the show.
Mark Gurman also had some new information about how Apple will present its AI features that will come with iOS 18. The keyword here being beta, which can either signal the state of AI and Apple's pace in catching up with what's already been released. I think put another way, it could be Apple's legal team is more conservative than other companies, or just that, you know, Apple wants to set, like there are people in my life who are iPhone users, Mac users, who don't know what ChatGPT is yet. And I'm still like evangelizing it more on that in the plus section of this podcast. So I think to put this stuff out there, beta is pretty fair. Even if Apple were shipping everything that OpenAI or Google or Anthropic were doing anyway. But I think you do think that there's some element of this that is, we're not quite where the others are yet.
Yeah, I mean, beta. I completely agree with you that everything that's out there today, whether it's the AI previews in Google Search or ChatGPT or anything, there needs to be more stress on the beta preview parts of them because they can make mistakes and the hallucinations are a huge foot gun, right? Like, you can't blindly trust what these things produce. They're good, they're useful, they're way better than what we've had in the past, but they're language models, they don't really know what they're saying, right? They just produce sentences that make sense. I think in Apple's case, all that applies, but I think what Mark Gurman was kind of suggesting here is that even some of the more tamer features will also be getting the beta preview labels, which may suggest that they are still kind of like not quite up to scratch. Like, we don't know, honestly, how good Apple's on-device models are, how good their own Ajax model is.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to find out very soon. But I think what Gurman's suggesting here is that at least some of those features, even not like the crazy stuff where you can like produce paragraphs of text or, you know, it can spout lies, just things like message replies or suggestions. Like, sounds like some of that might also be labeled as a beta preview, which is a kind of sign that Apple kind of knows that they're like rushing here and they're trying to catch up. And I think what you're going to see in iOS 18 is them announce a lot of stuff. A lot of it will be labeled as previews. Maybe some of it won't be ready for iOS 18.0. It's going to roll out over time and slowly and gradually. Wow. And maybe in the future, then when they're happy with something, they can then drop the beta.
And that's the key thing. They're happy with something because they do call things beta. Usually like the flagship new software feature of a new iPhone is beta at first. Like, but the way Apple,
well, I mean, an ironic example is Siri, right? The flagship feature of the iPhone 4S when it shipped with the iPhone 4S, it was a beta feature.
Yeah.
They labeled it as a beta.
Wasn't portrait mode that way on the 7 Plus?
It may have been. Portrait mode didn't even ship with the first release.
Yeah, like it's those like 0.1 releases, you know. Yeah, and there's been a number of those over the year.
And more, the most recent example I can think of is the Personas on Vision OS, right? They're betas.
Yeah, they're betas. And so like you said, happy with. There seems to be a point where, you know, we think it's good enough to use, but this is not the end goal that we have for this product, and we think, not that we can get there in 2 or 3 years, but we can get there in 2 or 3 months, you know, or maybe 6 months. And so to me, beta means we think this will get much better sooner. You know, we have a roadmap in mind and we're not there yet, but we're on track to get it where we want it to be. But in the meantime, go ahead and use it, you know, but just know it's going to get better in a matter of, you know, within 12 months or within a couple of years versus, you know, a decade from now or something like that. This isn't like a finished feature that we're releasing and never touching again.
You know voicemails where it transcribes the text?
That was beta for a while.
I still might be, to be honest. I don't even know if it is or not. And it's still not in most. The other thing about that is it's still only, I think it's still US English only. Like, I don't think I have it in UK English.
Yeah, there's a lot of AI stuff.
And the thing I really want them to ship, you know the thing they did last year where you do like the call screening and it does like the voicemail on the lock screen where it transcribes when you get the call?
Yeah.
US only.
US.
No other countries.
Yeah.
This, I think what I think you're going to see is Apple in iOS 18 ship a lot of the stuff that the other leading AI companies did last year. So like, they're not going to be on the cutting edge, right? But they're going to ship them in a product that you actually use day to day. So I think they might have utility, but they're not going to be so impressive that they're like, wow, you know, I've never seen this before. I think it's going to be mostly stuff that you've seen other companies demo before, but it'll be in the products that you actually use.
I mean, it was obvious from like ChatGPT 3 that
yeah.
if you know, you do this stuff and integrate it with Apple's ecosystem in a way, you know, not in a way that only, and because only Apple can do this, you know, because only Apple allows to do this, that you can see these features from photos to music to Siri, calendar, reminders being better because of it.
Like, you know, the ChatGPT 4.0 stuff, they literally just demoed 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
Really impressive, you know, especially with the voice intonation and the multimodal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Apple's there, right?
Well, like, neither is OpenAI. Like, they haven't even released that fully yet. The voice.
Sure, okay. What you're going to see in June, they're not going to match that, right?
No.
They're going to ship stuff that can be shipped out to billions of customers worldwide, maybe English only to start. We'll see. And it's probably going to be all the stuff that, you know, GPT and Google were doing about a year ago, right? Where now it's at a more state of maturity. And you have to account for the Apple, quote-unquote, catching up phase, because they're further behind, but they have made a deal with OpenAI of some description to do something. So there is big question marks there. But I think overall, I think people's expectations need to be slightly less like, because I think some people are going to come out of WWDC and be like, well, that was disappointing. They just showed stuff that everybody else is doing. My take on that is like, yeah, it's stuff everybody else is doing, but it's going to make your phone experience way better because it'd be integrated into the system. I'm not expecting from this year Apple to be like pushing the cutting edge of generative AI. I think they're just going to ship what everybody else does, well, maybe to slightly less good quality.
They did break new ground on AI, according to Tim Cook, but we don't know if that was AI's ground or Apple's ground.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there has been this report from The Information where this might actually be what he was referring to, right? Mm-hmm. This kind of confidential computing model where Apple is going to, obviously, they're going to do as much as they can on device, but they recognize that these huge generative AI models require, you know, gigabytes of RAM, and they require terabytes of hard drive space, and they require fast network access to assimilate all the information. So really, it has to be done on a server. And up to now, Apple's been, you know, Apple's messaging in privacy has been, we're going to do everything on device. We don't want to have your data. We don't want it to be on the server. You can do advanced data protection on iCloud to be end-to-end encrypted. We don't care. All we want to do is be like a dumb storage device. We don't care about it. All of the advanced processing can happen on your phone. Mm. What stays in your iPhone stays in your iPhone, right? That kind of mantra. But they've hit up against this brick wall here where to compete with the cutting edge features that customers now expect or will very soon expect, they have to put stuff on the server. And basically what The Information is saying, Apple's developed this system, which is cutting edge in the state of privacy for AI services in the cloud, where they will be able to process user data for AI on their servers without the data being decrypted in memory. So what happens for most of, like, everyone stores their data encrypted, but when they actually want to do something with it, they have to decrypt it, right? So like if you're doing a transformation on an image on like Google Photos has your images stored in an encrypted fashion, but they have the keys to decrypt it. They decrypt it, they do the transformation on the image, and then they store it again encrypted. But if you were to take like a snapshot of that memory from like a hacker or a nebulous actor or government or whatever you want to say, they'd be able to see at some point the decrypted image. What The Information kind of implies here is that Apple's developed a way to store this data and process it on their servers, on their silicon, in a way that it will be encrypted all the way through so that Apple doesn't have access to your private data. And if law enforcement sent out a subpoena, Apple won't be able to supply anything because they don't have it. So it's quite a cutting edge approach that I don't really think any other AI company does at the moment. So and I'm not sure it will be applicable to like all features. It might only be some features, right? Like, I'm not sure you'd be able to apply this to literally everything, but it's some way that Apple can differentiate themselves. They'll have the on-device stuff. They'll shuttle some stuff onto their cloud. And then they'll also have the OpenAI deal for something, maybe a chatbot in some form. We don't really know how that's going to be expressed in the UI yet, but I think they can come forward to June and be like, look, we're shipping you features that customers expect. They won't say it in that way, right? But you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But we're doing it in a way that's more private than anybody else has done before. That's going to be their edge.
Yeah. Can we just say, well, a couple of things. You mentioned what happens on your iPhone. I think since last week's episode, Chance was able to get a lot of information about what happened with the iPhone photo.
We did cover that on last week's episode. Sorry. No, you're right. Episode went out where we criticized them not saying anything.
Yes. Yes.
And literally the same day the episode went out, Chance posted the thing where he got some more information.
More information about it, right? And so just to bring that up, that yes, since last week's episode, there was a lot of, you know, this talk of Apple should not just let this, you know, linger. Well, they didn't. They were able to give Chance a lot of information, which was helpful. Address many of the points that were brought up on that episode. Other thing, well, I don't know what the other thing was. So
AI. I think the question is, how much can they do on device is a real big question. And what devices will support the on-device processing, right? Because, you know, I have an iPhone 14 Pro, not the iPhone 15 Pro series, or the base iPhone 15 has the same chip as the iPhone 14 Pro, right? Like, is the A16 chips powerful enough to do on-device AI, or are you going to have the brand spanking latest A17 chip to be able to do it, which is just in the iPhone 15 Pro series, and then obviously later the iPhone 16? Or is it going to be able to go further back? What about products like the watch, which have lower power chips? What about the HomePod, where you'd hope they'd better give advancements to Siri, but they have, you know, low power watch chips too? The Mac is a different kettle of fish altogether. Keep Macs for a lot longer, but they're also more powerful. You know, where's the cutoff on what they can do? And at least with this information report and a bit of the Bloomberg reporting that's come since, it sounds like that all the features will be available on, you know, many years back worth of devices. But some of them will be able to do it on device and the rest will have to defer to the cloud. Yeah. So hopefully, like, what I'm thinking from my perspective is, at least right now, I'm not expecting the iPhone 14 Pro to miss out on much of these features. It just might be that some of them take a bit longer and they have slightly less privacy because they have to defer to the server rather than do it on the phone itself.
Yeah, well, same for the 15 Pro. I mean, they're going to be showing off software for the, you know, that we use on over the summer on beta, but, you know, probably don't expect there to be like iPhone 16 Pro this fall, like exclusive to that hardware features for AI. Mm-hmm. Like Apple's what Wall Street wants. I don't know. They probably do want everybody to buy a new iPhone, but like what they want is for Apple to show their AI muscle. And that's done really by delivering AI on Apple's user base.
At scale,
not saying, you know, however many number of iPhone sales that Apple makes, those customers get the really good stuff.
What Wall Street wants is money.
Yes.
And I think, you know,
you can monetize it.
There hasn't been much reporting on this, but it seems almost inevitable that some fraction of these features will be paid for through some service somehow.
Right. I mean, if you're using a server, then it makes sense. I mean, people pay OpenAI for ChatGPT. So a few things. Just going back to that custom emojis conversation we had a moment ago, we're going to get through AI custom emoji before we get custom watch faces that you can, like, you know, whatever you want.
Maybe AI can make you a custom watch face.
Yeah. Number two, Apple has this movie with Scarlett Johansson coming out.
Fly Me to the Moon.
Fly Me to the Moon. They're also partnering with OpenAI, it sounds like, for a lot of, you know, for at least the chatbot feature. So, like, Scarlett Johansson suing, or, you know, we'll probably sue OpenAI over the voice, or at least, you know, maybe settle before, you know, it goes to court.
She'll probably settle.
Yeah, probably settle. But it's this whole funny thing where, like, Apple has to promote Scarlett Johansson's new movie. It's their movie. They're partnering with OpenAI. OpenAI has this awkwardness with Scarlett Johansson, so that's a whole fun thing.
And you saw the blowback to the Crush ad, right?
Which, yes,
I don't even think was even meant to be a reference to AI at all, but loads of people saw that ad and were like, this is showing that you can just use AI to replace everybody's creative and everybody's businesses.
Yeah, if anyone watched that actual keynote, they replaced musicians in that keynote that the ad was a part of by saying, hey, we have AI band members now.
So, like, but the ad itself was not Apple saying, like, you know, we hate creativity, we hate the arts. It was, like, it was misinterpreted. But the reason it was misinterpreted is because everybody's, you know, the public mood is, you know, I don't know about this AI stuff. It's going to screw everybody over.
Sure.
And so Apple has to tread very, very carefully. And OpenAI is a very wild company for Apple to partner with on that basis, right? Like, a partnership with Google would be way more in their wheelhouse in terms of, you know, mature, enterprise, calm, careful. But they've signed a deal with OpenAI for something.
OpenAI is like, deliver the most, you know, break things, ask permission later. Like,
I mean, even this week, right, there was a report that the OpenAI safety team didn't see ChatGPT until after it was released. Yeah. Like, you know,
with the board.
Sam Altman and co. are pushing, they're the definition of, you know, move fast and break things, right? Which is not Apple's normal MO.
Yeah, not just the safety team, but the whole board itself didn't know about ChatGPT until it was on Twitter. They said, which, you know, depends on how you feel about it. But we'll talk more about that in Plus, I think. A few more things here. Apple kind of can't do a whole lot of criticism of, like, we do things on device and not in the cloud, even if they have this, like, special cloud mode. because they're partnering with a company who is all cloud. No, they doesn't have devices. And then
unless maybe they run the OpenAI models on Apple's servers in their special confidential cloud, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think you have the on-device iOS features.
That's a pretty big give for OpenAI.
Exactly. Yeah, like I think you have on-device AI features powered by iOS. You have Apple AI features that can refer to the cloud, and then you're going to have the chatbot experience thing that maybe runs on like Apple servers, but it's not going to be in the confidential sandbox stuff. It'll just be like a deployment. Yeah.
No, they'll have a new indicator light color, like they have the location light and the video light.
Be like, please, not more orange dots.
Purple for privacy and like. Yeah. And then lastly, you know, I think the more Grumman reporting on AI stuff is like Apple's got their Ajax stuff, they've got their features, but they know that customers want a chatbot, you know, which is the ChatGPT app basically. But I also think like not just to have an app on it, because and it's like, well, what's the big deal? You can just have ChatGPT in your phone. Well, I think the chatbot stuff is also like what people want out of Siri. So like photo features and music features and you know, web summarization and Safari, like, yeah, those are AI features that aren't necessarily chatbot. Like you don't have to, you can like press a button and do it and not like give a prompt. But I think you can think about like ChatGPT as a chatbot in the way that you think about Siri, not in the like give it a prompt to run an action, but like have a, you know, use Siri like conversationally. I mean, that's been a part of Siri since the beginning. And so that's just something I was thinking about is like you can't just say like we do a partnership with OpenAI, but and you kind of do want to heavily promote the ChatGPT aspect of it, not just like hidden algorithms behind the scenes.
Yeah, I think the OpenAI stuff is a great, like, ignore the political side of it, right?
Yeah.
Pure technology, it's a great fallback option. So you have Siri today, they make Siri better, full stop, mm-hmm. using on device and thingy and better models and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But at some point, it's still going to be a find a query that it doesn't know what to do with.
Yeah.
And what's the fallback today? Here's some results on the web. I've done a web search for you.
Yeah.
But what if the fallback was instead, I've asked ChatGPT to format an answer for you. Here it is.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I hope they do, but maybe not.
Yeah. More on that in plus. I have a lot to say about
anything else on the kind of privacy server stuff. I think the only thing I would say is, yes, to date, Apple has been very heavy on the on-device marketing, mm-hmm. but their marketing team has no reservations about turning on a wheel or turning on a heel when what they're selling is different to what they were previously selling, right? So
yeah,
the world is different. They will change their mind. I think if they stuck to on-device only, they would be inhibited in terms of what their products are. And so they've made the sensible choice of relaxing that policy a little bit. They're trying to find ways to do it on servers as private as possible. And their marketing team will have a story for that.
They've also
Does it completely gel with what they've been telling you for the last 5 years? No, but that shouldn't be the obstacle to... like, they're not always going to be able to predict the future correctly. And there was a big juncture in the road about 2 years ago where it was like, you know, there's some really powerful AI stuff that requires servers. And it's a better future for Apple to be on that train rather than to completely reject it just because they're trying to stick to the stringent privacy line they always have.
Yeah, I think there's a little more nuance there too than just like, is it private or not? Like, there's some on-device stuff that Apple has touted doing where others were just server only.
Yep.
Because Apple's got powerful hardware, other company like Android, you don't know what the hardware is going to be. If you want to deliver an Android feature, you want it to work for everyone, even on crappy hardware. So it's got to be.
Yeah, they will do as much as they can on device, mm-hmm. right? There's still going to be some stuff where they're going to have to use servers.
Yeah.
And if they were following their old mantra, they would just not have the features. But they've obviously adapted, and now they're going to offer the features.
Yeah. But even things like photo search, you know, I remember Craig Ryder mm-hmm. saying, we don't need to. We know what a horse looks like.
Yeah.
We don't need a server to tell us what a horse looks like in your photos. You know, it's identifiable. Translation on device, like there's benefits of it, not just being private, but like also offline. Like you can do translation offline on your iPhone. And so it's performant because it's offline. It's performant because there's no server related to it. It's just all on your, like if your device can do it, then do it. But also the generative AI stuff is just, it's not like on device. It's not the same scale of performance, like the same compute task. So I think you can say like we do those things not just because of privacy, but because it's also just efficient and it's a better experience. But in this case, there's this, you go from the realm of possibility and then impossible. And so yeah. For that reason, you know, you can categorize it differently.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Me too.
iOS 18 is going to be huge.
Yeah.
And not too far away. We even had Apple confirm that there will be a WWDC keynote this year, just in case you were worried, you know.
That's right.
They're going to have a keynote on June 10th at 10 a.m. And Chance was invited, so he'll be there, which is fantastic. Yeah. But more on that, we'll do our full WWDC preview episode next week, because that'll be our last episode before the event. That's all for the main show. You can rate the show on the Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you want. You can send us feedback, happyhour@9to5mac.com. You can find me on social media at BZAMayo. You can find Chance at Chance H. Miller. Hopefully be back next week. And thank you very much for Zach for filling in for him. Obviously, it's been a pleasure. We did this show for, what, 7 years straight? Until
400 plus episodes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And we're fully back in the flow. So thank you very much for being here, Zach. Where can people find you online?
I'm on social media at ApolloZach, in places where that username is available.
and you can read him on 9to5mac.com.
That's right. And tune into the plus portion to figure out where I went. No, I'm kidding. AI.
In plus this week, we'll be talking a bit more about ChatGPT, because Zach has gone all in and uses it loads. So I'm fascinated to hear exactly how that's going. All right. Sure. Thank you, everybody. See you next week.